We are here today in the lovely town of Pacifica, California, for another dog training cast. This is a lecture given by Pup, and Jaws pronounces it rather funny. Jaws says poopy, but it's because it's spelled P-U-P with both P's capitalized. And Pup stands for People Understanding Pets. They give free lectures every month, and Boston and I are attending one and asking questions about rowdy dogs, which is the topic of the lecture. The People Understanding Pets website is peopleunderstandingpets.org, and that's spelled PEOPLEUNDERSTANDINGPETS.org. So it's www.peopleunderstandingpets.org. And all the handouts that are referred to in this lecture are available on that website. The location is the Chit Chat Cafe, and it's at the foot of a very long, steep hill that leads down into downtown Pacifica. Pacifica is right on the west coast. It's about as far west in the California United States as you can go. And the front windows of the Chit Chat Cafe are about 10 feet away from the ocean. We, however, are sitting in the back, and we're facing away from the ocean. The cafe is very comfy. It's got sofas and coffee tables. It's got little chairs. It has a deli that makes sandwiches, and they make mochas and other espresso-type drinks. It's very convivial, and it's a great place for a free lecture, and you'll discover that the one disadvantage of it being free is that the beginning of the recording is very, very noisy, because a lot of other clients are there enjoying, the customers are there enjoying food and coffee and having their evening social hour. As the lecture progresses, many of the customers thin out, and it gets pretty quiet, and then at the end it gets really noisy again because some of the participants actually have more steamed coffee drinks made for them. There's also a little bit of microphone noise in the middle because I accidentally get my microphone cord wrapped around my mocha and almost drop my mocha into my lap, but I recover at the last minute and we do not have a mocha catastrophe. Also, Boston has been at work for almost 12 hours that day, so he's pretty restless and he has a little trouble settling down. And because this is kind of a correction-free zone, I'm a little leery about correcting him in front of this positive-only dog trainer. So I'm being really careful not to correct him, and I'm having a little trouble making him settle because of that. Also, one of the women who's attending the lecture with me is standing behind me, and she keeps feeding him dog cookies, and that's really annoying, and I'm trying to keep her from doing that. So there is a little bit of distraction. I'm trying to be polite to this woman who keeps feeding him dog cookies, trying not to correct him, trying to listen attentively to the lecture and ask questions. I should tell you that Pacifica is a very foggy, cold, miserable place normally, but it is a beautiful sunny February evening in California. It's about 60 degrees. The sun is shining very brightly on the water, and that's another reason it's so crowded. A lot of people are sitting up near the front just looking at the ocean out the window. So it's a lovely place. In fact, my husband is sitting up front with his computer, and he's working, and he's pretending not to listen, but actually later he asked me lots of questions about the lecture. So even though you cannot hear the ocean in the background, I thought it might help to kind of picture this setting as you listen to this PUP lecture.
To learn how to be a dog trainer. So I've been training for about 3 years. I assisted in classes for about a year and a half before that. So I've seen a lot of different aspects of animals. And what I've been discovering is a lot of the problems that animals run into is that to do with a lack of education.
Sit.
The people aren't educated about, you know, the right pet for their household, or how to choose a pet, or where to choose a pet, or they don't know how to train their dogs, or they use all the traditional techniques I talked a little bit about since she brought up being what we call a crossover trainer, is someone who used to use old training techniques where you use a lot of corrections. And leash corrections and a lot of punishment to get
settle.
The dogs. You know, you punish the bad behavior instead of rewarding the good behavior. So I saw a lot of the different things, a lot of these different components affecting animals' lives. So I formed PUP as a way to kind of get the education out there and address a lot of this stuff. So I am a nonprofit, so if you find it in your heart after the lecture, if you want to give me a donation, I'll never complain. So tonight we're going to talk about rowdy dogs. Why don't you guys first give me a little bit of background about yourself, your dog and what you're mostly interested in. Want to start, Beverly?
I have two boxers. One is a sweet 11-year-old. Who's so sweet, and when dogs bark at her, she just keeps walking. And then I got a 3-year-old as a baby to keep her company. And that's a beautiful boxer as well, but she's just wild.
Yeah.
It's leash, not only leash aggression, but inconsistently aggressive to any alpha dog. So if the dog just looks at her, right? Or if it's a little dog that barks at her, she'll just verbally take it. She just never bites or hurts it, but you don't know that.
Right.
And so I got a dog walker because she needed some activity. And then so she goes out 3 days a week.
Good.
With the dog walker, and she's fine with her cat. And my other boxer goes with the dog.
Yeah.
If a dog now enters the circle of the pack just to play, you know, to come over, she'll slam it out of the shoulder and get it out of the way.
Sounds a lot like my golden retriever, actually.
You know? So when I put her on leash at Fort Funston, she'll walk, and then to little dogs, she sniffs them, she'll jump at them to scare them, and for sport. But not every dog, she's going to jump at the wrong dog.
Yeah. Yep, I understand that completely.
Or she'll stalk them to jump and play, and you don't know if she wants to play or she just wants to be top dog. She's very alpha. And it's a problem because I can't let her loose because I never know.
Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about the alpha and the dominant stuff in just a second. Let's see, Deborah.
That's okay, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your dog and what you're looking
at. Well, I've had lots of dogs, and so I know I've seen lots of different temperaments. This dog, Boston, he is a really sweet boy, but he can get so wound up if he's not played with. And then he's not pleasant to play with. So what ends up happening, if I'm at work all day and I go to meetings and say I don't get to use him as a guide very much, so I'm stuck in these meetings. Like tonight's a real good example because he's been at work and now he has to lay down and be good here. When we get home, he's going to tear around the house. He's going to bark like a maniac. And if I try to settle him by playing, he just goes absolutely frenzied. I can't, he'll go get all the toys out of his basket and drop them 5 feet away from me so I can't find him to fetch them.
Yeah.
He'll charge around, he'll bark really loud, and my husband will go, "Would you stop playing with that dog? He's really loud, you know?"
Yeah. And so is it mostly the barking that's a big problem?
I've been doing a lot of clicker training with him, and I noticed that when he's wound up like that, he gets so excited about the treat, he forgets what he's supposed to do.
Okay.
Now if I ask him to do something and I click him for it, he'll probably do it. But if he's in one of those emotional, he works himself up into an emotional state. Yeah. He's like a little boy.
And how old is he?
He's 5.
And how old is your young boxer?
3.
Okay. First, I want to talk a little bit more about alpha and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of terminology that was used a lot more with traditional training and a lot more with our old school of training. And what I've found, and what a lot of other people who, that I've learned from, that I look up to, what I revere, what we all started to realize is that alpha and dominance, so many people use that as a catch-all to describe why a dog does everything. And dogs are so much more complex than alphas, than just wanting to be the dominant one in the pack all the time. Some of the things that were clicking in my head when you were talking about your boxer, about going to the park and little dogs barking at him, that's a dog that's coming up in his face, and the barking and growling and lunging may be a communication to say, "Hey, you're being inappropriate, little dog, back off." Sometimes it's just communication. The hard part, of course, is when you're trying to weed out what's communication and what's aggression and what's going to be a problem. So there's a lot of different reasons. The pack thing is a really interesting one. I was mentioning my golden retriever, Zena. Mm-hmm. Sounds very similar. She's leash aggressive. And that's got less to do with alpha or dominance and more to do with when an animal is nervous or anxious about something, or even when we are. what you want to do is you want to put distance between yourself and whatever it is you're nervous about, right? I have this phobia about ants. And when I see ants, I want to put as much distance between myself and them as possible. If you were to hold me there, right in front of a great big mound of swarming ants, I would probably get really upset and maybe even physically try to push you out of the way. So if you think about it with a dog, if they're on a leash and they're feeling threatened, they can't make a decision as to what they want to do. One of the ways of putting distance between themselves and whatever it is that they're nervous about is to bark and growl and scare the other thing away. So that's one of the things that happens with the leash aggression, leash reactivity. Some of it too can be association. If you've got a dog that pulls on the leash a whole lot and has a lot of pressure around the throat, every time, you know, and it starts out, they just want to go play. And if over and over and over again, every time they want to go play, they're feeling this choking sensation, they can start to associate that sensation with other dogs and learn to dislike other dogs. So there's a lot of complicated things going on with our dogs. And because, you know, as people, we can't know what's going on inside each other's heads. But then when you talk about a completely different species, you know, it's hard. We don't know what's going on really in their head, but we do know how to change behavior. Regardless of why they're doing what they're doing.
Sure.
So that's a little bit about
one of the ones.
So what is a rowdy dog? A rowdy dog is one that's just jumpy, mouthy, rude, out of control, barking, won't walk nicely on a leash, just kind of high energy. And a lot of times we see this kind of behavior, it ends a lot of dogs up in the shelters. There's something like, I think, 6 to 8 million dogs that end up in the shelter in the United States every year, and only half of those end up on the house. We're looking at 3 to 4 million dogs, and a lot of those dogs don't have aggression, or they don't have biting behaviors, because a lot of those dogs are put down immediately. But the ones that are in the shelters for behavior problems, mostly it's because they just didn't have the proper training or socialization and boundaries set for them when they were puppies. And once they became adolescents, you know, 6 months to about a year and a half, 2 years, is when a lot of these behaviors start to really show their heads. You know, because puppies are really little cute little things, and we don't, you know, we let them get away with a whole lot. But it's a better idea when you've got a puppy from really young to really start them with the training right away before they develop the bad habits. So, you know, a little bit of prevention there goes a whole long way. I'm not going to be talking much really about aggression. Beverly, you had mentioned, you know, the leash aggression. I'm doing another seminar in April, I think it is, on leash aggression specifically.
It's a very nice foot.
Feisty Fido. And it's a lot of really great techniques. And I also will eventually be offering a class called a rally dog class for just this kind of thing. So you can take a look at that if you want to buy it from me. They're $10.
They have a class with other rally dog groups.
Yes. And I'm only going to have $3 per class because I've got myself and two assistants. That way we have a handler and a trainer with every, you know, a trainer with every dog. So they're going to be really small classes.
It's not so much the leash as it is when she first meets him, whether she's on a leash or not. It's crazy. It's unpredictable. You can tell by the look in the dog's eye. If it's challenging her, then she starts verbally getting into it. And then once that's over, sometimes she'll play with it then.
Yeah.
But then she'll. And you just don't know how that other dog.
Yeah.
I'm afraid the other dog is going to hurt. She doesn't hurt.
One of the other books that is really useful.
I know this author. I think I have her other book with hers.
It's called On Talking Terms with Tour Rivas, and she really looks a lot at how dogs communicate with each other. And if you remember that most of when dogs communicate with each other, it's nonverbal. They use their body language to communicate with each other. And until you've spent a lot of time really watching dogs, without having to handle one yourself, once you start really watching dogs for a living, you start to pick up on the really subtle things that most people don't pick up on. So I would bet with some practice, you could tell which dogs he was going to be comfortable with and which dogs he wasn't going to be comfortable with, and do a workaround with that. So we, that's something we can definitely, you know, address. And I'm sure either my class or, you know, I do have people I refer to for behavior consultations.
Boston Jim.
Settle.
Good guy. Get a good guy.
Every day, they're like kids. Like if a dog joins the dog, it's usually once that initial, sometimes it's fine, it's past the dog. There's a little King Charles that is my neighbor's dog, and they join us, and she's like fine. You just don't know, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
And I can't have her wait for me to go over and slam into a, you know, dog to get him out of the
Yeah. And one of the other things, boxers tend to have a play style that looks, that's a lot more rough than most other dogs. Yeah, very rough. And they can really annoy other dogs. You want me to move that a little bit closer?
That'd be great, actually. Thank you, sorry.
Pause there.
As a baby.
Is that better? Yes, much better.
I had taken her over to socialize her to my neighbors with a black lab at their house. And that black lab attacked her as a baby. We had to pull him off her, and she, like, cried as a baby. And then I don't know
so
that.
So you know what she's probably got more likely to have going on there is more fear issues than dominance.
Actually, a lot of service dogs have been ruined because of that. They get attacked, and then they're afraid to go out, and they can't even use them anymore for service work.
It's much more likely to be a fear or an anxiety issue. And, you know, the dominance thing, it's very situational. You know, my own dog, sometimes one is more dominant, sometimes the other is. It's not the set hierarchy, you know, especially amongst females. It's not the set hierarchy. It's very situational, you know.
Well, it is. The older boxer, she will take bones right out of the older boxer's mouth.
Yes.
Or she'll take the chair or the bed where the older boxer was.
Yes.
And the older boxer just sighs and takes it.
Yep.
But it's the unpredictable aggression. When she's in my car and we go by a dog, I can't stop her. And she'll, like, almost leave, you know, crash into the window in the car to bark at that dog. Very aggressive verbally.
Yeah.
She's never been anybody. I've been any.
Yeah, and that's something that you do know about her, though. Something I'm going to talk about a little bit is called bite inhibition. And that's that she knows how to control the pressure of her jaws so that when she does bite, she gets into these altercations with other dogs. She's not delivering a damaging bite. She knows how hard she can go to tell the other dog, hey, back off.
It's just all verbal.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's good. That's good news for you. Okay. Sounds awful, but it's good news for you. Okay.
She got bit on the ear by another dog that she growled at him once when he walked by. So he walked by again, she growled at him again, and he bit her on the ear.
I definitely recommend the Feisty Fido book for you. And then when you come to lecture in April, I'll cover it in a lot more detail. So I've already kind of talked a little bit about why we want to, you know, address the issue of rowdy dogs. Part of the problem is if you've got a dog that's really rowdy, sometimes, you know, people get tired of the dog barking in the house, or they get tired of the dog racing around and just knocking stuff over and being out of control. So then the dog gets moved to the backyard. And once the dog's in the backyard, a lot of what will determine a dog's behavior is your relationship with that dog. And if it's a relationship where your dog respects you and trusts you and enjoys training, you're going to have much more control over your dog. But as soon as that dog goes in the backyard, suddenly the dog doesn't have as much interaction with you. It erodes the relationship, and then you start getting digging behaviors and escaping behaviors and more barking, and then the neighbors get annoyed, and then that dog ends up in the shelter. So this kind of progression of events is really common. So that's why it's really important that we talk about it. And, you know, the guys also talk briefly about the cause. You know, they're young dogs. Mostly they just need to have boundaries and limits set for them in a positive way, especially if they've got any, you know, fear things going on. Punishments and harsh language are oftentimes going to set dogs off even more. So some of the behaviors that we're talking about here is jumping up. So if you've got a, does she jump up on you or?
Not to me, but new people, she's so excited that they came to the door.
I imagine he's pretty Boston's pretty sedate about jumping up on people since he's a service dog, right?
Well, there's certain people he just loves jumping on.
You mean like this?
Oh, he's being good.
I know. Yeah. Mike jumps up on me, but he's not. He jumps up for attention.
Mostly people he knows, and that's okay. But like, if my husband comes into my office, he'll just lunge at him and bark. And he just loves my husband.
So, what are some of the things that we used to be told about jumping dogs?
Well, these are things I don't do, but
right, exactly.
We were told to knee them and
step on their toes,
step
on their foot, or push them down.
Maybe just kind of put up
down.
Because all these sound kind of mean.
When you've got a golden retriever, or a boxer, or a black lab, or a pit bull, or a Rottweiler, a lot of these big dogs can see that as play. So they get rewarded for jumping up and getting pushed down.
Kind of running out of
table
space here.
I think they're on a short lead and, make her sit. And she will sit. She's so excited. She just is.
So what you do is you start this exercise at home, maybe have a few people over to practice, but if the dog's jumping up on you, they're trying to say hi, they're trying to get attention. So the best thing to do is just to not reward them for it and just turn your back on them.
Your mother has a treat, I don't have it.
And the first few times you do this, it's going to take a whole lot of patience because they're going to continue to jump and jump and jump. But if you just wait it out, eventually the dog is going to sit down.
It's huge.
And stop jumping.
Yeah, she does.
And when she does, that's when you say, good girl, and you got to give her a treat.
Sometimes
they'll start jumping again, just turn your back again. Some dogs, what they'll do when you do that, when you turn their back, they'll come around in front of you and start jumping up in front of you, right? So then all you do is go up, stand up against the wall. So they can't get in front of you to jump past.
Now I got a question. I have a Boston Terrier who thinks it's extremely amusing to come from a dead from the floor into your arm jump without letting you know that he's going to do that. It's like he won't, I'm going to jump in your arms. And I'll be trying to catch 26 pounds in my hand.
So when you see him coming, because you can probably usually see him get ramped up.
Yeah, he just does it this
just look away.
Okay.
Because that's kind of, again, we were talking a little bit about dog communication.
Yeah.
That's a symbol that says, hey, don't approach, just back off here. With my own dogs, when they want to come up and get attention, we're sitting on the couch trying to relax. They've been on a nice long walk and have treats and everything. And we just want to sit and relax for an hour. And they keep that pestering and pestering.
Yes.
I just tell them, all done. I put my hands up in the air and I look away. And that tells them you're not going to get petted from this point forward. And the key is, for all of these things, you have to be very consistent. Every time the dog jumps, turn around. Every time he starts to take that running, leap to jump up in your arms, look away, turn around. Okay? So if you do these things consistently.
I'm not interested.
What's that?
I'm not interested.
Exactly.
Yes. See, mine does that all the time. Drives me crazy. He stands up on me in this, and it's like his feet are right here.
Yep.
And that's very good. I have to remember that.
Do you transfer this to other people on the street? Well, have friends over, have family over, and tell them, I'm really worried about my dog.
I don't know why he's so interested in you.
Especially the big dogs. It's an easy excuse. I'm worried that my dog's going to jump up on a little kid and knock him down someday. So would you help me train him not to jump? If he jumps up on you, don't pay him any attention. Just turn around. Okay?
I meet people on the street, my street, and they want to say hi to her, and she gets so excited.
Yeah.
I don't tolerate her jumping on
you. Yeah. Whether it's dogs or whether it's people, if you say no, don't, it gives them a whole broad range of things that they could do. But if you give them one particular thing to do, if you say, instead of don't let her do that, if you say, when she jumps, turn around, you probably get a lot more success in getting people to help them out because you're giving them instruction on how to help them. Were you going to ask them?
Well, I was just thinking about that because I work with a bunch of college students. So that's especially the young people, he'll jump on that.
Yeah.
So you're really saying is when I talk to these young people, I need to say, hey, we don't want him jumping. So if he jumps on you, look away, walk away.
Don't
give him attention. Turn around. And so do you find even with your own personal dogs that you have trouble sometimes training other people?
Sometimes, but once you get to the point where you can be really clear with people and you kind of work out your what you're going to say and you get used to it, it becomes a lot more, a lot easier. My husband is a veterinarian. He takes the dogs to work every day. And half of the staff still lets one of my dogs jump, and half of the staff doesn't let her jump.
Yeah,
and his wife.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, your dog isn't going to know who it's okay to jump on and who it's not.
Right.
You know, especially with strangers. They have no clue.
Max knows who he can get away with stuff.
Exactly.
He'll get up in my daughter's face, and if she's laying down, and roll on her like he's trying to mark her.
Yep.
He tried that with me, and I went, no. My little head just backed up like, oh my God. When you get mad at him and you tell him to go away, he knows what go away means. He'll turn around and...
My nose is off. Yeah. Trying to talk to me.
And you can train a dog to do anything you want them to do, especially if you're using positive reinforcement, because a dog that enjoys training is going to be more likely to want to train rather than trying to get out of it. Okay, I've run across very few things that you can't get a dog to do with positive reinforcement. You know, some of the things I usually tell people: if it's a bad behavior, if it's something you don't like, ignore it. And eventually, if the dog's not getting any reward for it, the behavior will go away. If you can't reward it, or if you can't ignore it, the other option is to teach them an alternate behavior, such as if they're sitting, they can't jump at the same time, right? Those two behaviors you can't do at the same time. So if you get your dog trained to the point where they sit on command every single time, so it's not that hard. It's not that hard if you're consistent. What you do is we call it nothing in life for free. The dog has to sit for absolutely everything. My dogs, before they get a treat, before they get food, before they get their leash on, before we go out the door, before they get anything, when we go to the beach, before the leash comes off, they have to give me something before they're going to get something in return.
So you're not necessarily treating them every time you have them sit, but you are giving them some kind of life reward, right?
Well, when you're teaching a new behavior,
that's when you
don't have down really well.
Right.
Okay?
That's when you treat.
The best way to strengthen that behavior is to reward every single time in the beginning. Okay? Once the dog gets the connection, they do it most of the time, then you can start to back off of the food and just use ear scratches and trays and, you know, butt rubs and stuff like that.
What about when a dog walks by our house? Nuts at the front window.
Yep. I'm going to talk about barking in just a moment.
So just a frenzy. And no matter how hard you try to
Max
get
too.
She doesn't want a biscuit.
Okay. So that's a really good watchdog barking is what we call that. And that is, it's a really hard behavior to train out. It takes a lot of time and dedication. There's another option. When you can't train, you can manage. Don't let her have access to the front window. With my dogs, I've got two big chairs that are up near the curtains, and they just aren't allowed to sit there and bark at everybody going by. And eventually, over time, they kind of chill out a little bit. The other possibility in a situation like that with watchdog barking is you stand there, you know, set up, maybe have a few people that you know you can ask to come walking down the street. And again, you have to do some prep work before you can actually do this. You have to know how to get your dog's attention. I would recommend learning. There's one of my handouts is attention. I think you may have that one. It's a teaching about how to get your dog to do a watch me. And once you know that you can get your dog's attention in a low distraction environment, then you stand there at the window and you tell your person, you know, come on and walk by. And the instant you see that person, you just start feeding your dog treats. As soon as the dog barks, too bad, and you walk away.
Well, why would you want to discourage that behavior? I mean, wouldn't you want a dog to like alert you to somebody being on the front lawn, for example?
You know, it's a personal choice.
Yeah, how would you say, I want a little barking, but not endless barking?
Yeah. What you do is, your dog barks once, you say, that's enough.
Yeah, I've done
okay,
that.
You give them a, you have to follow through, okay? Mm-hmm. Put your dog on a leash so you have some control over where that dog goes. Mm-hmm. Starts barking, say thank you, that's enough. If the dog stops, yay, good dog, we throw a party, we give treats and loveys. If she doesn't stop, you say oops, too bad,
and then you take the dog and you walk calmly. It's not a punishment, it's just taking them away from the situation. And with my dogs, what I was doing initially, the bathroom was really close by. I just walk them into the bathroom, shut the door, and they get a timeout for a couple of minutes.
Yes, isolation. Dogs hate that.
Yeah, because they're very social.
Now, if you could apply the same things to my cat, that would be great, because my cat thinks he's a dog.
Cats are a lot harder, because it's harder to motivate them. They're not as easily food motivated. With your exercise, anything that's really difficult for your dogs and really a difficult behavior, find some new incredible treat that they've never had before to really get their attention. Frozen meatballs from Safeway, I tell you, they work wonders in my classes.
Bones from the butcher
shop. But you preserve that just for special training occasions so that it's a really incredible treat. You don't just give them regular old kibble and biscuits when you're working a behavior problem. So as I was saying, you know, a lot of different ways you can handle that. When you do a timeout, you need to give a warning cue so the dog is given the ability, is given the chance to stop the behavior, and then you have to give them the signal that they're going to go away now. And a lot of dogs are going to be really smart, and if you give them the signal that you're going to go away now, they're going to bolt. So that's why you get the leash, and again, it's not a punishment. If you start yelling at your dogs, and if you get yourself all upset, it's just going to fuel what's going on, okay?
Yeah, they pick that up. They pick the emotions right up. I know when I'm upset or I'm crying or something, he's like in my face.
So you see the person walking down the street, the dog starts to bark, you say, that's enough, thank you. Or, you know, whatever your warning cue is. And if they continue, say, oops, too bad, they go in the other room. If they stop, man, they get the good stuff. I talk about throwing a dog party, and by a dog party, I mean that you take 20 to 30 seconds and just give them a lot of love, talk to them, pet them, give them treats, and eventually they'll realize, wow, when I bark once and I'm quiet, man, mom goes crazy, you know? So, and again, consistency, I can't say enough. Consistency is the most important part of dog training, dog problems. There's other kinds of barking as well. One of the things, Deborah, that you were talking about with Boston's barking, sounds to me like he barks to get attention.
Oh, absolutely.
And the best way to get rid of attention barking is to not give them attention when they're barking.
Yeah.
So when they're barking, kind of like when they jump,
like,
I know.
Oh, shit.
And you know what? Barking, I'll be honest, is my least favorite behavior to try to cure, because it's so hard for us to hold out and do what we need to do in order to teach the dog, because it takes so much patience.
The kind of barking I'm talking about is not aggression, you know, the tail is about to fall off. It's
big,
wagging so hard.
Yeah, it's just the big booming,
and
goofy
bouncing from
bark.
One foot to the other, and bark, 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 bark. And he's like, oh please, please,
it's
more
exciting,
fun,
yeah.
More fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell that the, you know, it's animation.
I got a question. My daughter has a 60-pound lab. This dog has kissing problems.
Oh, slurping.
It
and
constantly has to wash something. I don't care if it's the slacks on your knees, the slacks.
This dog
your
too.
Arm, your hands.
What's slurping everything inside?
You know, everything. She constantly kisses. It's like nonstop. It's like, stop already.
Then give her a toy, give her something else. Give her a Kong toy. Have you guys used Kongs before?
Oh,
it's a big
those.
Rubber thing,
yeah,
and you
I have
put
a small
food
one.
And treats in here,
mm-hmm.
in the middle.
That.
Well, that can stop them from the constant kissing, because it's like
Well, they can't kiss you and chew on a Kong at the same time, right?
Yeah, that's
no,
true.
No, then they just dump a slimy Kong in your lap repeatedly.
Oh, it's so just gross.
Getting back to the demand barking, okay,
yeah.
the barking for attention.
Yeah.
If your dog's barking for attention, kind of like with the jumping up, they just bark, 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 turn around.
Yeah.
The better you are about ignoring that behavior like that, the more success you're going to see in the long run. So patience, patience,
mm-hmm.
patience, consistency, 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 okay?
Mm-hmm.
Have you've used a Kong toy, right?
Oh, my office is full of Kongs.
Okay, good. So you know they're all about.
I've got one that's about that big.
And I've got some good information on how to stuff a Kong.
Yeah, I like that, because I've just been reading about it on the web and experimenting.
Yeah. When you've got a dog that's never used one before, just put some kibble, dry kibble in it that falls out really easily so that they get the idea really. And I, you know, I even recommend picking up your dog's food bowl and rationing out the food and just feeding them out of Kongs completely. So the loose kibble will go in the middle, and they'll knock it around. They'll figure out how to get it out. You may have to help them at first. And once they're really good with the loose kibble, if you also feed them wet food, then you can mix the dry food with the wet food and put that in the Kong. It's going to be a little harder to get out. Once they get good at that, you can pack the wet food and the dry food together a little bit harder. Once they get good at that, my dogs are at the level where we make Kong sickles. I stuff them the night before, I put them in the freezer, and then the next morning, they've got this frozen stuff. It takes them a good hour to get through a Kong.
That's a good idea.
And then you can also get creative. My instructor at the Dog Training Academy, she had a border collie, and they're very high energy and they need to work. This was a working dog. And when she left the dog alone, the dog would get very bored and destroy everything in sight. So she would take five Kongs, stuff them, freeze them, wrap them in a baby diaper, put the baby diaper in the Kong in a Tupperware container, and hide them all over the house, okay? So this kind of gets to one of the other really common causes of bad dog behavior is lack of stimulation, whether it's mental stimulation or physical stimulation. They need at least a half an hour of exercise getting them out of breath every day, at least. Some dogs will even need more. And, you know, if you can't take them out running or you can't go to dog parks, you know, let them race around the backyard, play tug of war, put a little toy on the end of a rope and just swirl it around circles on, you know, around your head or on the floor so they can chase it. They need lots of exercise, but they also,
Now, what do you do with separation anxiety?
Oh, that's a whole
another lecture.
A whole lecture completely. I do have a handout on that.
Good, I need that.
You're a good fussy.
I have a nutball in the car.
So,
okay, good. I can use this.
Although I separate the two when I'm gone all day.
Yeah.
Because she bugs the older ones so bad.
Yeah.
But when she's come home from the dog walker and they're tired, then they're like, no, they're together now.
Yeah.
And that's all right.
Yeah.
But all day I don't leave the little one, just out of respect for the older one.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm sure she appreciates that. So
that's interesting.
I've talked about jumping. I've talked about.
Can I ask him more about the Kong stuffing?
Yeah.
Okay, he's at the expert stage. I mean, if you put milk bones or something in Kong, they'll be out in 5 minutes.
Right.
So, how do I get like some of the kibble and little stuff to stay inside so it won't come out?
That's where you mix it with the wet food.
So I take dog food. I wet it down with water. I stuff it in there, and then I mix some dry food in there with it.
Well, do you feed them just kibble, just dry kibble?
I feed them just dry kibble.
Okay. So one of the things you can do is wet down the food and stick it in there. You can also get, I didn't bring any with me, but there's this stuff called Kong paste.
Yeah.
It's like peanut butter or liver flavored. Oh. Put a little bit of that in there, too. It'll hold it in.
That won't gunk up your carpet?
You ought to see my house. I've got 13 animals in my house.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, Golden Retriever is probably going to lick up.
Yeah,
a little bit of peanut
He's
butter.
He's got a slurper,
He's probably going to clean up whatever it is that falls
That's
out.
That's true.
But the frozen, to do the frozen Kongs, I would take the dry kibble, wet it down, and then put it in, and then put it in the refrigerator the night before, and that'll probably hold it in pretty well once it's frozen.
That's true.
Yeah,
you could put
exactly. Well, you know, low-fat cream cheese, get creative.
Yeah, because
get it out from the end.
Dogs have long tongues. Sometimes you get a little tiny bit, different size Kongs for different size dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, they come as
big as. Mine doesn't really have a nose. I mean,
that's the one I have.
And they come as small as this.
Yeah,
but, even like my two are Golden Retrievers, and they've got big, larger muzzles like this. Their muzzles don't fit in there. It's their tongues.
Oh, yeah.
My dog, Zena, can clean this thing out.
What size do your Goldens have?
There.
Yeah, see, I have one like this in my office. Yeah, I'm sorry. It looks just like the one in your office.
So this is learning by association.
So he
also knows what a Kong is.
He knows what a Kong is.
What's that?
He's had Kongs ever since he was a puppy. Yes.
Yeah, my Boston has Kongs, too. And when he's trying to please me, he'll run looking for the Kong to bring me because it's like, look, Mom, look what I got. I got this toy.
Yeah. Yep, and it probably works.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
But I'll show you. I had these stuffed in my Kong this morning, but they were gone, in 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Those are really easy for these guys to get out.
Yes, we know.
I'm handing you a handout right now on Kong stuffing. Here's one.
Could you stuff it under my other handout?
Yeah, I'll put it down for you.
I just don't have enough hands.
I
got it.
Let me forget before you leave.
Yes, we need to. I know. We've got treats here. You're very fuzzy.
So some of the other behaviors. Dogs that are really mouthy. The best time to address that is when they're puppies. Do you guys have dogs that are mouthy at all?
Oh, like gum you?
just like put their mouth on your hands a lot.
Bite.
No.
She doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It doesn't sound like we won't. No. Unless you really want to.
I have a cat who thinks that he has to give me passion bites, but that's different.
I had a question about your handout, though, because you were saying that teeth should never touch skin. And I was thinking about that. I mean, what else does the dog have to play with? If you're wrestling with it, I mean, and it's not allowed to touch your skin, it doesn't have hands. How else can it play?
Well, I mean, they play by wrestling and body checks. They use their bodies.
That's true.
Tug of war is a wonderful game for your dogs because it helps them with their some of their predatory instincts. You
don't
I can't.
I don't like. Max has impulse. He lacks impulse control. If I play tug of war with him, he forgets the intensity with which we're playing, and he'll jump up and try to bite you.
But he also probably the way that you work around that. Is you probably know how long it's going to take him before he gets ramped up to that
level. He starts growling.
And if he starts to growl, oops, too bad.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
His
brother, constantly, if he's like tired or overstimulated or whatever, he'll start that growling stuff, and he'll get that crazy look in his face that only a Boston can get with the big bug eyes. They look like they're lost every marble in their head.
Yeah.
And he gets scary. He lunges for you.
Yeah.
And Max, he'll do it occasionally, but I have forbidden him to do that. I tell him no.
Yeah.
No growling.
You know, telling him no, the dogs here know so much that it's not a very clear
signal
to them.
So how do you make him stop?
When he does it, too bad, you walk away. Just end whatever interaction you're having with him. So he learns that kind of behavior
is not
acceptable. That his prized resource is going to just give up and leave.
Okay, I'll tell my daughter that, because this dog gets scary when he's like that.
Yeah.
And he's only this big, but if he lunges for your face, you
kiss
him.
You know, the other good thing to do if you've got a dog that gets really excited and really amped up is practice alternating between settle and play. Okay, so
good,
for a settle, what you want to do with a settle is talk to your dog in a slow, calm, quiet voice. And I'm going to pet Boston. I'm going to show you just nice and
demo dog.
Just nice and calm. You know, whatever they like. If they like having their ears scratched,
you're going to
be slow. You're going to be slow and calm. And once the dog is settled down, you know, maybe give him a little treat. And then say, okay, let's play. You know, practice settling them for a while first for a couple of days until you get good at it. And then you can alternate so that you learn how to settle them down when they're already ramped up. So the way you do that is get out tug. Start playing tug of war before they get ramped up.
You'd have to move a few tables out of the way before we try revving them up.
Yeah.
I just wanted to warn you, he can rev up.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I don't know if you've seen revved up Goldens, but.
We're not going to take her on my little errands. Now that it's cool, you open the
car thing is so
and
hard.
When she throws herself against the window of the car at the dog, and so I have to yell at her about it because
although
really
yelling isn't working.
No, because then both
and
you were revved up
at the dog.
And the
but
thing
I
about
just
yelling,
say nothing because it's the dog that she's after.
Yeah. The problem with yelling. Is that barking is one of those what we call a socially facilitated behavior. It's when one dog in the crowd gets barking, you notice how they all start to chime in.
Oh, sure.
Well, he's starting to bark and you're chiming in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
it's beautiful.
You know, it's a really hard one. I really, honestly, car barking is really hard. Some of the best suggestions I can give you for that or park, you know, away from a lot of traffic where there's a lot of foot traffic, a lot of people and dogs going by. Again, you can also try putting things up on the window so she can't see out as well.
Wow.
You know, maybe from the outside, put a, you know, tape a little piece of paper up or something from the outside so she can't tear it down.
See, Max thinks the car is a crate.
So, you know, the other possibility is if you wanted to address that, you would have to work on it, set it up, okay, instead of just letting it happen naturally. And you would do something like leave the other dog home, it's just you and Ruby. And let's say, you know, you start to, maybe you can set up and have a friend walk by with the dog. You know, drive down the street, park, you know, a couple feet away from your home, have somebody walk by. As soon as she starts barking, oops, too bad, we go back in the house. So that she learns that kind of behavior in the car gets her left home. But it has to be really immediate, okay? If you're two blocks away and you say, oops, too bad, and you drive home, she's probably not going to keep that connection. So you want to do it really close to your house to begin with to kind of do some setups. But that's not, that's definitely work.
It's very hard when she's a very smart, and she knows the day of the week based on how I get dressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Dogs are very tuned into cues like that. Your shoes, my husband's got a red jacket, but the only time he wears it is when we go out to take the dogs to Fort Funston. And every once in a while, when it's like raining and he wants to wear that jacket another time,
They
go wild when they see that jacket.
Oh, I just have to put my fanny pack on and the dog is standing at the door. Yeah. Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah. I get my training pouch or my clicker or a leash and they go wild.
Yeah.
So, did that answer your question, Deborah?
What was my question? I'm sorry, I really was listening.
About the jumping.
About the,
the barking.
Oh, the biting. We were way back in biting, actually. You know, he loves to like put his whole arm.
That's
my,
right.
My
that's
whole.
Right. I got sidetracked.
I'm sorry. He loves to take my arm in his mouth and go raw, 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 like that. And you know, it always seems to me that he's having a good time. I can't imagine telling him he can't do that.
And you know. To some extent, the way that you interact with your dog is going to be your choice, okay? If you've got a dog that, you know, for one thing, Golden's are bred for a soft mouth. Mm-hmm. If you know that he never, ever puts any pressure, you know, an open mouth,
it's
you
just
know,
loud.
I'm going to touch your arm, an open mouth like this is different than teeth, okay?
Right, oh, I've had teeth. I've had other dogs.
Yeah.
I've had other dogs, but I can't. I mean, he has such a good time waving his open mouth around.
And as long as he never goes over the line, that's your choice.
Yeah.
But just as a blanket statement, it's a lot better to say, you know what, teeth on skin doesn't work. We play tug of war, and if you know, that's one of the rules of tug of war. I have a whole handout on the rules of tug of war, and I realized about 5 minutes before I left tonight that I didn't have copies. So if you guys are interested, I can email you copies of Rules of Tug of War.
I read that on your website, but I have one question about it. Mm-hmm. And that was, okay, so if the dog is doing something in the tug of war that you've decided is against the rules, then you just stop the game and turn your back. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
So that is your only real punishment, is ignoring.
Because, you know, behavior that's rewarded is behavior that's going to be repeated.
Right.
And we don't always know what's rewarding to our dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, the watchdog barking, the reason it's so hard to get rid of, it's because every time the mailman comes and your dog barks, it works because the mailman leaves, right? He doesn't stick around.
He makes the point.
So the dog is rewarded because they get what they want out of it. So if you take away what they're getting out of it, eventually that behavior will become extinct if it's never rewarded. Mm-hmm. You know, if I went to work every day and I never got paid again, how do you think I'd be going to work?
Well, what do you do with a dog that marks when he's freaking out? When he thinks that he's not getting attention, he runs around marking things in the house. It's like, excuse me. And then I have like stuck his nose in it.
Yeah.
I've spanked him. I've ignored him.
Austins,
he drives me nuts with it.
I would just stop the punishment. Because there's probably, if he's marking like that, there's probably an anxiety component to it. And punishment can just make that worse. If he's marking, have him on a leash as soon as he starts.
But he does it in the house.
Exactly. But sometimes when you're trying to get rid of a behavior like the watchdog barking, have him on a leash. If he's getting really ramped up, you know, again, set it up. You know, play with him, get him ramped up. If he looks like he's going to mark, say, oh, too bad. We go outside.
He does it, and then he'll walk around, and he gets that tick, like a nervous tick in one of his lips starts rolling
like
up.
With him, your best bet is going to be to really watch him closely.
I put a diaper on him. We have these like doggy bloomers on him. It's like so that they urinate. So when he does it, he urinates at himself. That doesn't help either.
Yeah.
He's just obnoxious with it,
is
and
he
he's
neutered?
Smart. No.
That will help.
Well, he's 9 years old. I'm afraid to neuter him at this point.
It's still even a better idea to neuter him because they're a higher risk for testicular tumors. There's no risk of testicular tumors because they don't have testicles if they're neutered. But that may even still help. But 9 years of that kind of behavior is going to be a little bit more difficult to get rid of.
Yeah, well, he got that way when he was living with his brother.
Yeah.
Because it was like pee wars.
And
like,
if both of them were unneutered, absolutely.
Yeah. So now he's living with me and he's still doing it.
Yeah. And that's a really deeply ingrained behavior. It's going to take a lot of work to train out of him.
I mean, I've even crated him when he's done it.
Yeah.
Okay? Well, not hit him or anything. Just stuck him in the crate and said, okay, no pee-pee in the crate.
Yeah.
And he'll look like. dead.
And, you know, if, you know, if you catch him in the act.
I've never had been able to, but I'd love to.
Then it, then any punishment that you do later is going to be completely worthless, because their attention span for either punishment or reinforcement is about 1 to 3 seconds maximum.
Oh, he knows when I find it and I have the mop in my hand, he knows he's in trouble.
The
mop comes in my hand and he's like, in the bathroom.
That doesn't mean he knows why he's in trouble. He just knows that that mop predicts that something bad's going to happen.
I've stuck his nose in it.
Yeah.
I've rubbed his nose in it. I mean, I
doesn't work.
People make connections like that.
That's
they
amazing.
They don't have our thinking processes. They don't make connections.
Yeah, I guess I'm attributing more humanity to him than he actually is capable of.
And see, that's the thing. I mean, I love my dogs. Like, I can't even begin to tell you. I adore my dogs. But they're also not people. They're dogs. They have different motivations. They do learn a little bit differently. They're a completely different species. And I think it doesn't do them a whole lot of credit to expect them to behave like people.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about rowdy dogs, and all of these behaviors we're talking about, at the same time we see them as bad behaviors, they're also very normal dog behaviors. And outside of our society, our human society, they're not a problem in the dog world, you know? So we have to teach them what our rules are.
Makes sense to
and,
me.
And because they're dogs. You know, a book, I get lots of books, love books. Gene Donaldson's Culture Clash is a really wonderful book, and it talks a whole lot about a lot of these kinds of myths we have about dogs, about expecting them to behave like people, and about a lot of the dominance and alpha stuff, and all of these different things. It's a really wonderful book. She's really an incredible person. But yeah.
My monster will, the little one will, there'll be a biscuit that she didn't really want at the time.
She'll
and
put
it on her a toy, and the older one will like walk by and kind of be interested in it, because that one is always food motivated. She'll come off the couch like a rocket.
Yeah.
And take it from her.
Yeah.
Only because she has.
And you know what? If your dogs aren't getting in fights and if they're not hurting each other, do not interfere. I had a very similar issue with my dogs. My older dog, Xena, was the first one in the house. And if you follow, like, if you're, you know, dominance, you know, alpha, you know, describing them in those terms, she's always the one on top when they play. She always initiates play. She always eats first. She always goes through the door first. So you would think that she was the dominant dog. However, you get a brand new stuffed animal, or you get a really good bone or chewy toy, and the younger dog does exactly the same thing. If Xena has it in her mouth, it's hers, but as soon as it hits the floor, even if it's 2 inches away, then Bella does the same thing, races up, grabs it, and runs away. It's resource guarding is what we call it. She, and because dogs, part of their background, part of their hardwiring, their nature, is scavenging. Okay, you know, a lot of dogs out in the wild have to scavenge for the food. They never know where the next meal is going to come from. So it behooves them to gather up all the resources and protect them, okay? So if your dogs are hurting each other, let them work it out.
So gathering is normal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've seen that. My daughter's female Boston runs around, gathers all the chewy toys, and takes them to her bed.
Yeah.
Then her son comes, gets him out of her bed,
yep.
takes
and
him over to his
they're
bed.
As long as they're not hurting each other, let him be. Because what happens, at first, what I started doing was taking the bone back from Bella and giving it back to Xena.
Yeah, that's
and
mm-hmm.
Bella started to guard from me.
Oh.
And I
don't
Don't do that.
Exactly. Okay, I'll have to tell my daughter, because she does, they do it all the time.
I have another golden, she's 13 and a half, she's my retired guide dog.
Uh-huh.
And he just completely, when I say beats up on her, I don't mean in a mean way, but when she comes in from outside, he has to hump her. He takes away all her toys, but she never fights back. Sometimes she'll snap at him if he hurts her,
because
she's kind of old and creaky, and she doesn't like him using her as a stepladder.
Yeah.
But I've pretty much left them alone, because I figure, you know, they are social animals.
Yeah.
They should be able to figure this out without me. But I feel a little, I just feel a little sorry for her, because it's like...
I know exactly what you mean. I felt the same way with Xena. And that's why I started giving the bones back to her.
Yeah,
that doesn't...
Because I felt bad for her.
Yeah.
You know what? If she really was that interested, she'd make a stand. okay? What's most important to her is getting attention from me, even more than bones or anything else.
That's why they do that, to get the attention from the human.
Yeah. Or to whatever it is that they like. If they prefer bones and treats, or if they prefer attention, you know, with Xena, the attention's more important to her. So if I'm petting both dogs, she's always trying to push Bella out of the way.
Oh, yeah,
and then when it comes to bones and stuffed animals, Bella wins because that's what she loves most.
Yeah, you know, Max pushes the cat.
It sounds like your 13-year-old dog is giving him feedback when he really needs it.
She doesn't want to be stepped on, and she will snap. But the rest of the time, she doesn't seem. She just sort of tolerates being hugged, being shoved, having her toys taken away.
And I know that the guide dogs. I know that the puppies. A lot of their dogs are really well socialized. They have to be.
Both those dogs are well socialized.
So it would be a different story if you had a dog that wasn't around a whole lot of other dogs and didn't know dog language.
Oh no, they both. Like other dogs.
But they know dog language. They both are very well socialized. And in that situation, they're communicating with each other. They're working it out. You know, as long as nobody's getting hurt, they're working it out. And
she falls over when he humps her sometimes, though.
Yeah, see, now that
she's
since
old.
It could be a physical, you know, it could cause her physical harm. Then again, that's the kind of thing where you get him with a rock solid sit before you do anything.
Yeah.
If you start, you can't hump and sit at the same time.
That's true. You can't hump and sit. I didn't mean to cut you off though. I just wanted to finish it. I'm done now.
When I go to Fort Funston, because that's the one place I used to be able to let them run the little loops in that same park. Now, if a dog comes even on a periphery to come and play, he'll be able to knock them out. So she's had to be on a leash always when we've gone there. And the older one doesn't do it.
She does like a body check and kind of she chases off.
Vicious verbal, you know, to that dog.
Then again, you know, you want to give
her. She won't come to, you know, she'll like see him over there and then like she runs like a filly. I mean, they are so light for a boxer. She's actually
3-year-old boxer. It's going to be
light. And you can't, you know, she'll stay with her group, but when she's on the leash, my older
he's looking at you with so much love.
Well, he just wants me to pet him some more. That's all.
He really loves you. You can see it in his face.
I know he's crazy about me. Dogs love me.
I would say for her, Fort Funston is probably not a good place for her.
God, he's such a devoted animal. What a good boy.
And I would say if the other dogs want to go to Fort Funston, take that.
I'm not kidding.
Because you're right in being concerned about how other dogs are going to respond to that kind of behavior. And if she doesn't have good recall, you run the risk of her running off, you know, if she gets in an altercation with another dog.
So we just thought after as much, I was very uncomfortable about it, but my dog walker, we got the shot collar.
It's going to make your problem worse. I want you to start
working with her Friday.
Throw away your shot collar. It's going to make it worse because if you know, you're describing her early on, you know, if she hasn't had a whole lot of socialization.
She's had a lot. Oh yeah.
You know, if she's just I never ever recommend shot collars.
Desperation.
Yeah. I would say what you're gonna be better off doing is working with a behavior person one-on-one to help her with that kind of behavior. Because what you're going to want to do with her, it's kind of similar to people who have herding dogs. They go to a park and try to herd all the other dogs. You want to practice with her getting a rock solid recall in all situations.
Yeah.
You start out easy in your house, in your backyard, in a field where there's not other people around, and you really work on a rock solid recall. With your recall, I would say pull out all the stops when she comes, sardines, give her just like crazy, crazy good stuff. And then once you've got a really rock solid recall with her, then because you're going to need to focus, if you know, if you've got a husband or, you know, kids or friends who can go with you to keep an eye on your other dog so you can focus on her, have her on a long leash. And again, you know, if you see her starting to want to head off towards this other dog, call her. If she doesn't come, you've got that long leash, you can reel her in and make her come.
I'm with that. She'll sit there like
and that's good. So if she's sitting there and not reacting, you're giving her rewards for that. Okay? Then you need to up your food or find something else. If she likes to play tug of war, or if she likes balls, or find something else that she really likes that you can do with her.
Tell me about your rowdy dog foods. How does that work?
Well, I haven't done the class before. It's a new class for me. But I've been doing this with my own dog for years now. So the way the class is going to work is probably going to be an 8 or 9 week, probably a 9 week class. The first 3 weeks, we don't even have dogs in class. It's mostly getting you guys used to your handling skills without having a dog there. Because once the dog is there, the emotion level goes through the roof. So I can tell you from personal experience, with Xena, explodes another dog. I get embarrassed, I get upset, I get angry. So you gotta work on your skills without the dog present first. And then a lot of what you're working on is just gonna be handling skills and different things like doing a watch me instead of watching the other dog. Practicing, you know, if you see a dog coming, pressing U-turns and how to get away from that situation. And eventually, depending on the class and how much progress we make in class, my hope is that we can at least get to a couple of really brief introductions or walks, you know, like 10, 15, 20 feet apart. So it's going to be a very gradual progression, and where we get is going to be really based a lot on the dogs in the class.
Once she's met the dog and got that initial markup, then she's fine with it.
I would say that she...
It's the strange
dog. Yeah. And, you know, I know the shock collars are really attractive because you get an immediate response from them, but the long-term effects are much harder to see because, you know, like, if you don't see the effect of something right away, it's hard to know that that's where it came from. But we've seen over and over and over again, training with shock collars and things like that is just a really bad idea. Yeah. Sorry to tell you.
What about those inverted chokers where the spikes...
Oh, good question.
Pinch collar.
For dogs that have difficulty walking on leash, those pinch collars, those prong collars, can physically damage a dog's trachea, spinal cord. I've heard of paralysis in the front end from them. They can be really awful used in the wrong hands, or if you've got a dog that pulls too hard. And the best thing is there's a bunch of new, cool things out there. To keep a dog from pulling. One of my favorites is called, well, there's a couple different ones. There's a sensation harness or the easy walk harness, okay? So when I'm done talking about this, Deborah, I'll give this to you so you can kind of feel it here. But the harness, you see there's a strap that goes over the back, strap that goes underneath the belly, and then there's a strap that goes across the chest. And the leash hooks onto the strap in the front.
That's weird. Normally they're in the back.
Yeah, in the back, like sled dogs, right?
Yeah, exactly. I have. That's what I have.
Pole.
I know, but mine works better on a harness than on a collar.
Try one of these. Because what happens is, as the dog is pulling forward, you see the leash kind of turns the dog's body sideways, making it a lot harder to continue to pull forward.
Okay.
I'm very curious about
there's
it.
Also... Hi, it's a stuffed animal. Yes, it's a stuffed animal. So here's the harness.
Oh.
And here's a little stuffed dog. And in the front there is where the loop is, if you want to.
Yeah, let me just
that's interesting because I know when he's on a collar, the leash is to the collar, he pulls. The minute I put the harness on, he walks like a civilized animal.
See, this is a great segue. She was a plant. She's getting me from one subject to the next. I was going to talk about loose leash walking. It's another really common one.
That's good stuff.
That's out on the market is either gentle leaders or halties. They're head harnesses.
I have both. I have the halty.
And if you've got a dog that
you're passing, you're drooling all over.
He wants to eat the toy.
I won't allow him to. It's all right. It's
if you've got a dog that acclimates to these pretty well, they're wonderful tools. The only catch with these, you have to be careful. If you get a dog that runs to the end of the leash, you could hurt the dog's neck.
And if you have a dog with no nose, the halter doesn't work.
Exactly.
Because I have
boxers too. Yeah. So try one of the easy walk harnesses that attach in the front.
That sounds great.
They're wonderful.
What do they call them again?
Easy walk or sensation.
Easy walk.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Take a pen and write it down. And, that'd be great. And if you want, if you fill this out, I can put you on my mailing list.
I'd be loving that.
I'd like loving everybody.
So, loose leash walking, since we're heading that direction, you've got a couple of choices when it comes to teaching your dog to walk nicely on a loose leash. You can either train it or you can manage it, okay? Managing it means using a generator or an easy walk or one of those kinds of tools, or, you know, like old school prongs and choke collars. If you want to train it, what I recommend that you do is separate your walks into two categories. You've got a training walk, and then you've got a regular walk, like potty, exercise, everything else. When you're doing your regular walk, keep your dog on your tool, whether it's a gentle leader, sensation harness, something like that. When you're doing training walks, do it only on a flat collar. Okay, so the first thing that this does is your dog will know that there's different rules associated with different pieces of equipment. And the catch is, with the flat collar, you may never, ever, ever let your dog pull. So that's why training walks are probably, you have to do at a time when you've got probably 20 minutes, and you don't care how far you get. You may only get 10 feet from your door the first few times. But you start to walk. As soon as there's tension on the leash, you stop.
What about the rounded collars? You know, the ones that are rolled collars?
With little dogs, they're fine. That would be fine for just for the training exercise.
For training exercise, that's okay?
Yeah.
Good.
But you're not using a tool. You're using just a regular leash, a regular collar.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So any the instant pressure, the leash is tight, you stop. And you wait. Wait for a decent long time for the dog to stop pulling. And then as soon as that leash is slack, yay, you can continue your walk. Now, the first few times you do this, as soon as you say yay and start to continue your walk, the dog's going to be out of the leash pulling again. And that's when you stop again.
Okay, there.
Okay,
there you go.
Very good. Mm,
beautiful.
Pizza?
Yeah, that'd be me. That'd be me.
So that's one technique. Another technique is, and this is one that people in my classes seem to really love. We use a target command or a touch command. And what you will do is put, could I use Boston for an example?
Yeah, but let me take his harness off if you're going to work with him.
Oh, no, I'm just going to have him touch my hand.
Oh, okay. He kind of knows touch already.
Oh, he does? Okay. Do you want to show them what he does with touch?
I did it based on reading books. I can't obviously watch by observation, so I may not have done it right.
Okay.
Boston, touch. Good boy.
Very good. Very good.
Boston, touch. 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 Oh, he's touching the other hand. He got a little tangled up.
So at first, to teach your dog touch, I use an open palm, but you can use a closed fist either way. Have him,
what?
And you can cheat at first, put something really smelly on your palm, so they're likely to want to come up and sniff it. And if you don't use a clicker, use a marker word to mark the behavior. So as soon as the nose touches your hand, say yes, or click your clicker, and then give him a treat. If you do this probably for 5 minutes, you can start giving your dog a hand all over the place and tell them touch, and they're going to come up and touch your hand. So the way that we use this for loose leash walking is, once your dog will target your hand really easily, you get them to target your hand with your palm kind of facing backwards, and they'll do a touch. You take a step, ask them for another touch, you know, say yes, give them a treat. Take another step, have them touch, say yes, and give them a treat. Once they get back, you can start taking 2 steps, and then 3 steps, and then 5 steps, and then 10 steps. And you're working up to the point where you can do a half of a mile between touches, okay? But again, you know, the key here is to move slowly, and you don't move on to the next level until the dog really is doing it very well, about 90% of the time, okay?
Uh-huh. I've used the word wait. When Max is off the leash, mm-hmm. and he's running ahead, and he's getting too far ahead, I'll go, wait. He'll stop and turn around and wait for me to come up.
Great.
And
great.
So we haven't done the touch thing, but he knows the word wait.
Yeah.
He'll run out the house and I'll say, wait. And I can actually shut the front door and he'll stay right there.
Yeah.
He won't leave.
Good. Very
so
good.
That's a good, is that a good keyword, like wait?
And you know, when it comes to commands and keywords, you know, I basically tell you guys the stuff that I usually use. But as long as you have, I've got another handout here called Doggy Dictionary.
Uh-huh.
And the idea behind the Doggy Dictionary is, here's a one for you. I'll put it under your others.
Stick it under my others. I don't have enough hands.
need to grow a couple more.
Retriever.
The idea behind the doggy dictionary is that you're going to have one command for each behavior. Because dogs don't know our language. And if you've got five different, you know, behaviors for the word wait, because for me, wait means you have to wait at the door until I tell you you can keep going. And for some people, wait means stay. So you have to use one word per behavior and use that consistently. But beyond that, you can make up nonsense words if you want, because dogs don't know.
Because everything sounds like la, 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 la,
right.
Anyway.
I had people in class one time that all of their commands were Chinese because everybody else in the family was Chinese. So, you know, you're teaching a dog that the sound has a correlation to something in the real world.
On the leash walking, instead of mine does touch more as a gaze. When she can jump as high as my head for touch.
Oh, yeah. So if you've already used touch for something like that, do you use you hold your hand out like this, a flat palm?
She'll touch. I mean, if you just say touch, she'll jump wherever to touch.
Okay.
You may want to use
a different word.
Oh, that's cool.
So the touch that you're using right now.
Touching your hand and not pushing on the leash, is that the I don't get the touch and walk.
Okay.
No,
right now with her touch means play, jump up, have fun.
Yeah.
So you can use a different word. And, you know, say target, and have her just touch your hand. Get her used to just touching your hand calmly. And you may, you know, she used with her, used with a closed fist. That might be a different visual signature.
Then they're walking with you, is that
right? Right, so here's what you do. You've got your dog on a leash. I use him as a stuffed dog.
You can borrow Boston if you want.
Oh, it's okay. He's all comfortable there. So you've got your dog on the leash, and you've got some treats in your hand. And he's starting to, before he starts to purr, you ask him for a little touch, and he comes up and touches your hand, give him a treat, and take a step forward, ask him for another touch. He'll come up, touch your hand, give him a treat. So you ask for, in the beginning, you take a step, ask for a touch, then you take another step, ask for a touch, and then you gradually increase the number of steps you take so that your dog is walking by your side in between the touches.
And you gotta be really gradual. If you got impatient or something, you would backslide. You would
I use the keywords like wait and stop. He knows those two words. Stop means he's just gotta freeze where he's at, and he'll look around and he'll stop. And same thing.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Ow. You look like you're still a little confused.
She's not going to be back there with me. She's ahead.
Yeah.
And very annoying.
Well, and that's why your training walk is different than your other walk.
Yeah.
That's why, and that's the difference. That's the hard part. As your training walk, again, you may not get more than 15 feet past your front door. But the most important thing to do is to be really consistent. So we can take her on a regular walk on her harness or on her other equipment. Let her run ahead. That's fine. But when you're doing the loose leash, she has to follow the rules. You go back in the house. Okay. Let's see. Recall, getting your dog to come on call is another one that a lot of dogs have trouble with. Best way to start is doing that, you know, in your home. I like to do, one of the things we do is a backup recall. You can pull food in front of their nose. You back up about, you say come, back up about 10 steps, and then give them a treat. You do that a whole bunch, get them used to the game, and then you can get two or three of you in your backyard or somewhere with low distractions and start calling the dog randomly back and forth between you. Whenever the dog comes, they get a treat. If they don't come, you walk up to them, put the treat in front of their nose, and you lead them back to where you were when you called them. So that they learn every time you say, and it's very important, you guys, again, to have a word. Because a lot of people just say the dog's name, and that doesn't tell the dog what you want. It might get their attention. So if you say Boston, come, you know, you're getting his name by their attention by saying his name, but then you're telling him what you want him to do and being really clear, because most of us are not clear enough with our dogs because we learn differently with language and everything else. We learn by inference and everything else. So practice that. I also recommend surprise recalls. Get some Tupperware containers with some little biscuits. Put them in different places around the house. When your dog is least expecting it, Ruby, come! Comes racing in from the other room, gets a treat, good dog. And every once in a while, just surprise my little Luke, because they learn the training game. They know that when you got your pouch on, you got your clicker out, they know that they're going to be good because they're going to get treats. So this way you can teach them that coming to you when you call works even when it's not obvious that it's a good thing. You also don't want to call them, like if you've got to leave the dog park, don't call them to come to leave the dog park. Either use a different word or just go get them. Because I see this over and over again at dog parks. People say come, and what you mean is come over here, but what that word has come to mean to the dog is that we are going to leave the dog park now, so I better run off the other way so mom can't catch me. So you spoil your recall word by using it in a situation where it's something that the dog doesn't like.
What about a word like cup, like I sometimes say, Max, now?
Now, here, I've had people use the word front. Again, you can use any word you want, but just be consistent and have that one, and use that one word all the time with that behavior.
And you have to make sure you associate it. You know, I mean, you can't just like say this word out of the blue and the poor dog doesn't know what you mean.
Right, and that's why we do the backup recalls. If you say come, put a treat on front of the nose and have them follow you, they learn that what that means. You know, another thing is your dog's going to follow your body language more than they're going to follow your words, okay? So most people, they call come, and they start walking towards their dog. So if you're following my body language and I'm walking towards you, what direction are you going to go? You're going to go away from me, right? Call your dog and run away. So make the chase game so that they chase you instead of you chasing them. So don't call them for something bad. Don't repeat the word over and over and over again. Say come, and then you can go and make all sorts of silly goofy noises, and slap your legs and whistle and make kissy noises, any other noise in the world. But don't just keep saying come, 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 because they'll habituate to it and eventually it will mean nothing to you. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I say, tell them, go get your toy. Wow. He knows toy. I guess that's the word. The sucker word. And he will inadvertently go get the squeaky ball that he likes that he can grab. He'll run all over the place, up and down the hall playing keep away.
Yeah.
Go get your toy.
And you know, if you don't want him to play keep away, don't run after him.
That's, oh, no, I don't.
When we got our younger retriever, she was 6 months old, and she was kept in somebody's backyard in a 6x6 chain link fence. And the only interaction she got was stealing things and running away with them. The only interaction she got. So when she came into our house, she was awful about that. And basically, you know, management, number one, we pick up stuff we don't want her to have. And number two, if she grabs something and runs away with it, oh well, I walk around and go to the other room.
She'll get bored with it.
They get bored because it's no longer a game. So if your dog's doing a behavior that you don't like, ask yourself, what is the dog getting out of it? And remove that, okay? Ignore it if you can. Give them an alternate behavior if you can't ignore it. And I can't stress enough the importance of positive reinforcement training. I mean, even if you've had dogs for years,
kisses
and hugs and treats and rewards, and having a good relationship, like I mentioned before, you know, if your dog likes to train, Zena loves training. You know, I do a lot of different things with her, a lot of different, we do clicker. She's learning how to ride a skateboard, and she loves it. So I can train her to do anything because she's learned how to learn. She's learned the game. And once your dogs learn how to learn, it makes it a whole lot easier to control the behavior.
We have a game we play at home. When I tell him, love you, he'll immediately throw his head up and howl. It's almost like he likes the sound of those two words.
But thank you. Thank you very much for coming, Beverly. We'll see you in April.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
A good animal.
And Bill, he howls incessantly. He's like, love you. And then he puts his head up. It's like he's trying to respond to the sound or the tone or inflection.
The dogs are they don't have language, but they can be very vocal.
And it always starts out with the kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you go right into it.
So one of the other topics that you were asking a little bit about was separation anxiety.
Yeah.
And I don't cover that in huge detail, but just briefly, dogs who have sometimes a behavior, okay, let me back up. What makes you think your dog has separation anxiety?
Every time if I leave him, the house by himself, like most dogs could be left in the house by himself, there is little squirty water here, a little squirty water over here, you know, whatever. In other words, I literally have to crate him if I leave, because he will mark the house.
Does he do that when you're home?
He does it when I'm home, he does it when I'm not home. So
it's less likely to be separation anxiety if he does it when you're home as well. Usually separation anxiety are behaviors that only happen when you're gone.
Okay.
And a lot of times there'll be things like a lot of vocalization. I've got a dog in my neighborhood that just howls and whines for about a half an hour.
So, every time he goes home. So what is the marking? Is it just like asserting?
He's an unneutered male who got used to having to mark his territory when he was with his brother. That's what it is.
And now we have a male cat, so I'm wondering if there's a
different species
that wouldn't like affect that.
No, different species.
So it's not because he's jealous of the cat.
You're such a good boy.
Okay.
It's more likely just be the habit that he picked up from many years.
And he knows it's wrong. And I'll say, did you pee pee? And
he doesn't know it's wrong, because for dogs it's not wrong, because they don't value the stuff in your house like you do. He knows he's going to get in trouble for it. There's a difference.
Okay, because I know the minute he knows that I've seen it, that head goes to the floor.
He knows you're mad at him. Yeah. He knows you're mad at him. He doesn't know it was. He doesn't know what it was that made you mad.
Him. What I've started doing is just say, bad dog, go away. And he just like slinks off in the corner somewhere. I don't hit him anymore, because I figured out that the hitting him accomplishes zero.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just knows you're really mad then.
Yeah. And that's what's going on. It's not that he knows that it's wrong, but he knows, you know, they make connections. You know, the house training thing's a perfect example. We, you know, if you've got a dog, it pees in the house. Dogs don't intrinsically value a couch or a sofa.
Yeah, that's
true. To them, it's all chew toys, right?
It has no
value to them.
That's true.
So when they pee on something, to them, there's nothing wrong with it. They don't understand why there's a problem with that. They just know that when the presence of urine and mom are together indoors, you get those three variables that are all there together, it usually means I'm going to get yelled at or whatever the punishment is going to be. So they learn that that's...
Now, he has days where he doesn't do it at all.
Yeah.
And then he'll get some kind of, I don't know if it's stress or whatever the heck it is, then he'll have days where he does it all day long and you want to kill him.
I see dogs who get punished tend to have a lot more of those kinds of behaviors as well.
You know, it's just, and I think he came to me like that from my daughter, because in my daughter's house, because she has multiple dogs, he was being yelled at all the time. And the last thing he likes is to be yelled at. He hears your voice elevate a little, he's in the bathroom waiting for another moment.
And as you probably know from being a crossover trainer, it's a difficult transition to make, because when you're using punishment and corrections, you get an immediate response. It doesn't necessarily always change the behavior for good, but you do get an immediate response from the dog.
The dog goes, I screwed up, I'm sorry.
So it's kind of reinforcing to you that you're getting a response.
Yeah.
What we have to remember is that immediate response is not going to train the dog to not do that in the future.
It's really hard.
But that's the hard part.
It's so easy.
So I'm doomed for him to do this till.
No, not absolutely.
Drives
not.
Me crazy.
Start using some of the other techniques that I'm talking about. My website. Let me make sure you've got my brochure here.
Oh.
On my website, I've got tons of articles
and
handouts. And it's never too old to get him into a class. I've had 12-year-old dogs in class.
See, I think he'd be a fabulous therapy dog. Other than that one slight negative piece of behavior, he is the most gentle, least aggressive dog on the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, he will sit in that car with a car full of raw meat and groceries and not touch jack squat.
But it sounds to me like, you know, you could really help him by learning a lot of new techniques yourself.
Yeah, because he's a great dog.
Yeah, because it's never too late to train.
Yeah, because he's so worth the trouble. You are so pretty, too.
He is a nice animal.
Any other questions you guys have? Anything that I didn't cover?
No, but you're very well, you're very knowledgeable. It's a pleasure to listen to you.
And the minute I leave, I know I'll have something.
Oh,
well,
no, I
you've got my contact information, and you can always, you know, contact me.
Can I donate to you, your organization via PayPal? Or do
not
I need
yet? I need to figure out how to set that up.
What kind of an organization do you have? I didn't catch that.
It's called People Understanding Pets, and all I do is education. I do dog training classes. I do the lectures.
If you have a business card, I'd like to give it to my daughter, because they have
take
a couple of They have, like I said, Kenny, his brother, is like...
Yeah. I do dog training, like I said, dog training classes.
And Joe needs help.
A television show here in Pacifica. It's on Fridays at 7 o'clock on PCT, Channel 26. Mm-hmm. It's well, it used to be called Discover Dogs. It's now Pup TV because I'm using a lot, doing a lot of other animals as well. And a lot of resources on my website and referrals if people need private trainers and things like that. So
you basically work with dogs and that's it, or just?
Mostly with dogs, but I also work with cats. I'm learning how. I've got two blue and golden macaws at home, and one of them's very aggressive. So I'm learning how to work with the macaws using clicker training and everything.
Now, is it? Am I trying to read too much into it? Can cats who have been raised and only exposed to dogs really pick up dog behavior?
Absolutely.
Okay, because Yang thinks he's a dog in disguise.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, he even stands up and begs like a dog for food. He puts his arms up to be picked up like a baby, the whole nine yards.
One of my cats spent quite a number of years with a woman who does dog rescue. So he grew up around 10 or 15